I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Lieutenant Joe Pangaro for Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. So we have just seen a national spectacular. Let's talk a little bit about our culture and where this is going and what's going on. The national spectacular I'm talking about is something that at one point in our history was a really important television event, something that people looked forward to, the whole country could enjoy, and that, of course, is the Oscars. The Oscars are awards for movie making, you know, whether it's best director, best actor, best actress, or whatever you want to call them, best female actor, because you can't say actress anymore because we've changed our whole wording system, but the best actors, male and females, or whatever else, you know, actors, whoever they are, actors in general, best scriptwriter, all this kind of stuff. We could all enjoy this together as a nation because movies are storytelling. You know, I guess in a time before that kind of communication, going way back in humanity, we had what? You're sitting around the fire and someone would tell a story. And we're enraptured by stories. That's who we are. We're people. We pass on our history. Before there was writing, we passed history down orally in the storytelling tradition. One person would tell the story of the previous generation and what they did and how they handled things, and that's how everyone would learn. So this is culturally, movies are an extremely important part of our overall culture. Over the course of time, we have seen, though, how movies can also change our culture. Movies and television, especially, now that it's in everybody's home, television is a ubiquitous piece of life now. Television is on, whether it's streaming services or traditional, you know, over-the-air television, if that's what you have, radio, communications, all this digital communication we do for entertainment. And that's really what it's supposed to be about, entertainment, right? Isn't sports about entertainment and the thrill of seeing excellence and all that kind of stuff? And it's all been corrupted. All of these things have been corrupted. So here's the Oscars. And it's supposed to be about excellence in making movies, excellence in storytelling. And we know that they've become political, and they're very far to the left. You know, the people in Hollywood are very, very far to the left. They don't live that way. You know, they're very anti-Second Amendment for you, but they have armed guards all around them. That's just a reality. I mean, hypocrisy is one of the biggest findings of hypocrisy you're going to see, of course, is going to be in Hollywood, where people, it's all pretend. See, Hollywood is all pretend. We know there's a lot of conservative people there, and some of them have made enough money where they can come out and be conservative, but, you know, if you're a younger person and you're conservative, you better not, because you won't get any work. You know, they'll cancel you before you even get started. Now, there can be a whole argument about whether that's right or wrong. I'm talking about the actual production itself. The Oscars were at one time were exciting because most people's lives were not glitz and glamour and movie star. You know, it was hard work. People worked every day. Myself and my wife, Kathleen, and I were talking the other day about the difference between our generation, our children's generation, and the generations before us. And I kind of pinpointed that probably Kathleen and I, I'm in my later 50s, she's behind me by a couple years, but we're in our 50s. And the generations that came before us, they didn't worry so much about free time. They didn't worry about enjoyment. They worried about work and career. Not everyone went to college. Not everyone had a job that didn't involve labor. Most people's jobs involved labor of some kind. And then you had higher-end jobs. You had people that were in the trades, that were skilled craftsmen, as opposed to just laborers. And then you had the white-collar crowd, you know, the people who did get to go to college and were the lawyers, the doctors, the accountants, and people like that. Well, when we look and we see my father-in-law, Ted, Ted's going to be 88 very shortly. His generation worked. They had God in their lives. They were about family. They were about neighborhood. They were about community, whether it was your ethnic community or your regional community where you come from. He came from Bayonne. Bayonne was a lot of Irish And he has a great connection to the Irish of Bayonne and the Irish of Ireland, especially Donegal. And that was important to them, to the people of that community, just like it was to the Italian community or the Polish community or the French community or any community. You know, your connection to them was important. And when we all watched the movies, when we went to the movies, the excitement, the intrigue, the fun of watching a movie, because the movies took us to places. The movies took us to places we couldn't go, right? We couldn't go to see the Maltese Falcon in real life, but we could go there. We could go to the land of Oz and how amazing it was to see that color spectacular in front of our eyes and see the world unfold like that. Movies, even into the modern era of Star Wars, which is really cowboys and Indians of outer space. You know, we see these stories, and this is why Hollywood was important, because we saw the stars, you know, and you fell in love with the women, and you thought the men were handsome and dashing, and you know they were bigger than life heroes, for the most part, other than doing like cigarette commercials, which most of them did. You saw them as they were good, God-fearing Americans, for the most part. You know, they did war bond commercials when the time was needed. They talked about America. You know, John Wayne did a whole spiel on America. It was a very pro United States freedom, liberty kind of a thing. War movies always showed the Americans as the heroes and doing the right thing. And we just watched this transformation, though, of liberalism as it engulfed the country slowly and steadily. That the movies and the content of the movie started to change. It got darker. It got more gritty to the point where it is today. You basically, if you're going to tell a story that's pro-American, it's very difficult to get that story made. Nobody wants to hear it. They want to hear the anti-American stories because that's where we are as a country right now, right? Isn't that correct? Very anti-American, anti-law enforcement, you know. It's negative now. It's very liberal and very negative. And watching the Oscar show, when I was younger, I remember watching it with my mom and my grandmother. And they would watch the Oscars. And they were so excited to see the big stars come out onto the stage. And they would come out and they would make a joke or they would kibitz. And it was fun. It connected regular people to their stage and screen heroes. You got to see them as real people sitting in the audience. You know, Lucille Ball not being Lucy from I Love Lucy. She was sitting there in the audience, you know, having her cocktail, and you got to see normal people. It was a great connection because it showed, like many other things, it showed the greatness of America. You know, here's this new genre of movie making and storytelling, and America had the best. America was the best. You know, our stories were bigger. We told unbelievable tales of people's lives. We told the classic stories. We told, you know, Ben-Hur and these amazing movies they put together. And then we see recently, the most recent Oscars, where these actors come out and basically it's one anti-American, anti-police, anti-freedom and liberty tirade after another of how, you know, America was so bad and America is rotten and, you know, African-American community should be very, very concerned because your children will die just going out into the streets because cops are bloodthirsty murderers looking to get your children. It's really sad. I didn't watch it. Don't confuse yourself. I didn't watch it. I saw it on the news feeds just enough to kind of get a flavor for what went on there. Because it is cultural, and because I have this show, and I wanted to talk about it a little, because I think understanding where our culture goes helps us to understand where we're going. You know, what does life imitate art, or does art imitate life? That's really how the saying goes. So we can see that, you know, there's a message here. This is off of Fox News. Oscars 2021 ratings expected to tank as some celebs use the platform to rail against law enforcement. Now, this is about movies. This is about movie making. Did you write a good script? Did you act really well? Did you emote so much that people in the audience were with you? They cry. No, it's about the speeches going up there and talking against law enforcement. When we look at the statistics, the story that is being told The story that is being told is convoluted and it's not true. All right. The story that I'm seeing in all these articles and all of this stuff coming forward is that these, I don't know whether it's just the celebrities or any people of prominence or anybody politically is coming out and saying that police are a danger, especially to our minority communities. The police are an ever-present danger. You could die at any moment coming in contact with law enforcement. And statistics were out recently, and we talked about them in a previous episode, where the unarmed people who are killed by the police, and there's lots of reasons that unarmed people get killed by the police. Some are perfectly appropriate, and others are questionable, no doubt about it. That's how it goes. But it's usually all based on the actions of the person that the police are interacting with. So let's be clear about that. So I think the statistic was like, maybe for the last year they had statistics, 2019, because I don't know if they have 2020 wrapped up yet. I think there were 24 African-Americans killed, unarmed African-Americans killed by the police, and there was 57 white people killed by the police that were unarmed. So Kathleen and I were talking about this, and she says, well, there's a lot more white people, so that would make sense. I said, yeah, but is that, you know, there's 330 million Americans. So, and they say our African-American brothers and sisters, our population there is 12%. All right, so 10% is 34, say 45, say 50 million African-Americans in our country. So out of 50 million, 24 were killed unarmed. Now, that's a terrible tragedy for each and every one of them, just like it is the 56 white people that were killed that were unarmed. That's anytime someone dies, that's a tragedy. That's a terrible, terrible thing to happen to anyone. Well, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, loss of life is terrible. But when we look at the number, you know, even if we look at the number of white people killed by police that are unarmed, 56 out of the other, what, 300 million people in our country, 280 million people, the number, and I don't mean to sound callous about this, but the number is extremely low when you look at those numbers. So the interactions, you know, you could certainly say to anyone, hey, if you're a white guy, the cops are out there killing us left and right. I mean, the number is certainly higher than the African-American community. All right. Now, maybe in proportion, it's different because there are fewer African-Americans than there are white people. But the reality is that number is statistically insignificant. Not the people. The people are all significant. Every life is significant. But the number, 25 out of 50 million, is an insignificant number. So it's not true that your every encounter with the police could lead to a minority person's death. It's just not true. It makes for a good narrative. It makes for a good way to stir political change. But it's certainly not true that anytime a young African-American man comes in contact with the police, there's a 75% chance he's going to die. That's just not true. And when we're telling our people that, we are pitting each other against each other. You know, this big attack on the police, is it really an attack on the police? I mean, we see hypocrisy when we see these famous people that are calling for, you know, defunding the police, get rid of the police, and then there's an intruder on their property. The first thing they do is call the police. You know, they don't go out and handle it themselves. They call the police, you know, but they tell everyone else we should defund the police. It's not really about defunding the police. It's about removing another traditional American institution, law enforcement. I remember being really surprised when Barack Obama became president, and one of the things he talked about, and I was surprised to hear it, but then I was even more shocked that no one talked about it further at length, when he said there should be a police force, an American police force, at the federal level, that was different than different than the FBI or in these other federal agencies. This would be more like a federal, maybe presidential police force or something he was talking about. And I was shocked at that, because don't we see in history that tyrannical governments often have their secret police, their enforcers, the ones that go out and not just the, you know, robbery people or the stealing or petty shoplifting or anything like that, the secret police that go out and enforce political means and political actions. Isn't that one of the first things that happens? They disarm the population, and then they have the enforcers that go out there. So to bring this all kind of together, I think the whole defund the police thing is another symptom of where certain groups, and I don't mean racial groups, I'm talking about political groups, are trying to take this country. It seems clear to me that our friends on the left are using the good and decent people who are consider themselves liberal. And like I've said many times, I have family and friends who are very, very liberal, and I love them very much. And I think they want the best for everyone. I think they have some good ideas. They just don't always have the right way to get there, in my opinion. So I think this is just another symptom of the effect that they're trying to have on all of us. They're trying to do something. They're trying to get rid of our traditions. They're trying to get rid of our symbols. They're trying to get rid of our organizations, all the things that made us traditional America, so that they can fundamentally change who we are. They're not hiding their message. They're saying what they want to do. And they're having great success. I mean, we can argue all the time that no, the great silent majority or the conservative patriots out there, they're going to be traditional. But we're losing. We're losing the battle. We lost the government. We don't control the government. We don't control the courts. We don't control anything. Basically, we are sitting back and we're counting on basically the most important man in America today for traditional America is none other than Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia. Senator Joe Manchin is a left-wing liberal senator, but he is not willing to jump over and take the country down that final socialist path, not under his watch, at least so he says. So of all the people in the country, all 330 million of us, the fact that Joe Manchin has come out, one of 100 senators, and says, I'm not going to go down that road, he's the only thing holding back the entire left-wing socialist agenda from taking over right now. So when I talk about Hollywood and the Oscars, and we see the change in, they've become very political, very anti-traditional America. The people that go up, they don't go up and get their award and, you know, thank you, Mr. DeMille, for, giving me a part in this wonderful story. No, they go up there and they start railing about political things. And it's usually they're railing about things on the right. You know, how dare people prevent abortion? You know, abortion is a right. How dare you talk about free children and life, and life should be number one. You know, think about that. That's kind of where we've come to, where protecting a baby is considered a radical thing to do to remove someone else's rights. So we have to think about where we're going, and I think the Oscars and the way it came off, the lowest rated, because it used to be part of Americana. It was something we could all enjoy, and now half of us don't enjoy it, and based on the ratings, more than half of us don't want to sit there and be lectured to by Hollywood elite people, multimillionaires with their own private jets who talk about global warming to tell you what kind of car you can drive, and they have multiple cars. The people that tell you you can't have a gun to protect yourself, and they have armed guards all around them. People that tell you if you want a wall to secure our country, you're a racist, but yet they have high fences and walls all around their property. We don't want to be lectured by people who are hypocritical. And unfortunately, a lot of Hollywood is hypocritical. So where's it going to go from here? I don't know. It is part of the cultural change in America, and it is a cultural battle that's been going on for a long time. So we need to open our eyes, look around, and see how can we get together? How do we fix this? How do we bring all our communities together? That's something we should all consider. This is Lieutenant Joe. We'll be back in a minute for round two.
Now, never before in our history have we witnessed the level of hatred that is now being waged against our law enforcement. While anarchist groups create havoc and overwhelm our first responders, these same groups and their corporate supporters are calling for the police forces to be shrunk and defunded. What can you and I do to make a difference? How can we stand up for what is right and to show our support? That's what I'm going to tell you about this incredible new platform. It's called ShopToTheRight.com. And it's a new shopping platform that will help you find businesses that align with your values. They feature products made in America. They support veteran-owned businesses. as well as our law enforcement community. This is a time when we need to stick together, we need to shop together, and we need to support each other. It's time for you and I to make some noise and stand up to protect our country. And one easy way to do that is to shop and give our money to companies that don't seek to destroy our way of life. So join the fight for liberty. ShopToTheRight.com. Support those American businesses that support law enforcement and veterans.
Welcome back, my friends, to Chasing Justice with your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. So thank you for letting me mull through my thoughts on the cultural perspective personified by the Oscars and how they go. You know, there's other things culturally that we're looking at also that are changing. All of the changes, whether they happen politically or culturally, are really connected. And I think that's where the connection between is art following life or does life follow art? We are all connected in that way. You know, the police officer who shot and killed the 16-year-old girl in Ohio, in Columbus, Ohio, who was brandishing a knife and was going to stab another young African-American girl. This has now become, it's both. It's become part of the cultural perspective. It's become part of the grinding of the mill, so to speak, of American culture. When we can't look at an incident like that and say, first of all, tragic that the young girl died in that incident. It absolutely is. No matter what she was doing, it's still tragic that she ended up dead. She didn't start her day, I'm sure, thinking she was going to be killed. It's tragic for the officer who did his duty, did what he was trained to do to protect life, especially when he saw someone about to be stabbed with a knife. That's what officers are trained to do. I'm sure in that moment he didn't take into consideration who was brandishing the knife and who was about to be killed. He saw one person with a knife attacking another, and he took action to save that person's life. This is a problem for the officer. How it's become a cultural mess now is that we're seeing people who, you know, words are very important. You know, words mean things, and how we use them and how they're being defined is really important. So when we see that incident, and we're seeing how it's reported in newspaper after newspaper after newspaper, and I think Representative Nunes did a great spiel when he talked about how words are used and stories and fake news defines things, when he came out and he talked about all the stories by, you know, the major newspapers and TV shows that came out over the whole Trump thing. You know, Trump is a Russian agent, and Trump is, he had a horrible, he withheld money from, Ukraine for these nefarious reasons. Each one of them proved false and proved to be a lie. Yet nothing changes. We don't see a change in the reporting. We don't see a change in anything. As we see these things take place, you know, the narrative that the media is giving us is that, young black girl killed by white cop. Okay, why is, you know, in reality, if you look at the facts, she was a young black girl and she was killed by a cop. That's true. But it's how the headline is written that is what really is the purpose, is to words mean things, is to drive a narrative. They're making it sound like this young lady did nothing. She was just standing there, and this cop decided to kill her because she was black, and which points out the truth that narrative is trying to generate, that, you know, white cops are out of control and they're there to murder our minority brothers and sisters, which is the farthest thing in the world from the truth. The reality, how about if the story was written like this? Police officer saves young black girl from stabbing at the hand of another teen. Was that true? Was that girl going to stab that other young African-American girl? Yes, she was. Did that officer save her from that stabbing? Yes, he did. But you see, in that description, in that narrative, what we're seeing is the officer is a hero, and he did the right thing to protect a young African-American girl. But that's not the story that the media wants to drive. What they want to drive it the other way. So even when they have something right in front of their faces that shows you that defies their narrative, they'll just twist the words, right? They'll twist the words to make it come out the way they want. And I find that to be probably one of the most problematic parts of this entire cultural grind that we're going through now. You know, I've said many times here, I can't imagine hating someone because of the color of their skin. It's just not something that's part of my makeup. I don't look at someone and go, oh, that person is this, therefore, oh, I hate them. I hate those people. I'm sure some people do. I'm sure some people are that vapid, that intellectually empty, that they base things on the color of people's skin. I don't get it personally, myself. I base everything on who the person is, just like I want to be judged on who I am, right? Not on the fact that I'm Italian-American, right? Well, I'm half Italian-American, I'm half Irish-American. But my last name indicates, you know, Italian-American. I don't want people to judge me on what they think about Italian-Americans. I want them to judge me on who they think of me, what I do, my actual words, the things I actually do in my life. And I think that's what everybody would prefer, I would think. That's my opinion. That's what I think. You know, I don't look at someone and go, oh, black guy, therefore I think this. No. I meet Frank. Hey, Frank, how are you? I don't say, oh, Frank, the black guy. That's not part of my makeup. I know it is for some people. And I find that unfortunate for our country that we're going through that. But why is that? I mean, why is that? Is there anything natural to seeing differences between ourselves, our groups, and other people? All right, so early on in segment one, I talked about my father-in-law, Ted. And Ted is very proud of his Irish heritage. Very proud of it. He knows all the Irish songs. He's a dual citizen in Ireland. He's been back to Ireland many times. He loves the Irish culture, the Irish people, and their history. He's very connected to people today. When he meets anybody, or you tell him a story about something happened, he goes, oh, what's their name? And he will tell you, based on their name, the different communities they came from when he was growing up. Because people had a connection to these different cultures and their heritages. You know, is that a natural thing to say, oh, they're from a different group than me? I think maybe it is natural to identify that, to see it, to see the difference. But does that difference make a difference? Or is that just a way to categorize? You know, Ted says, oh, who'd you talk to? I said, Bob Wolski. Oh, Wolski. I knew Wolskis in Bayonne. They were Polish. You know, they lived on 33rd Street. You know, they had a great restaurant that we used to go there and everybody would go. You know, they identified them as a particular group, different than his group, but it didn't make them bad. Right? Didn't make them bad, just made them, they're part of a different group. Don't we all recognize that? What neighborhood are you from? What state are you from? Believe me, I'm from New Jersey. And when I say this, where are you from? I'm from Jersey. Oh, Jersey. Oh, yeah, you got the turnpike, right? You got those, don't you have those stinky gas buildings all over the place? And that's what they identify Jersey with. Don't we have pride in our state? Right? One state to another state. We have pride in our family. We have pride in our family names. I think those kind of recognitions are perfectly normal. And to pretend that they're not, I think, is not normal. But do we dislike someone because they're from a different neighborhood or they have a different background? I would think we're pretty far past that at this point in time, right? You know, Martin Luther King, didn't he say, judge people by the content of their character, not the color of their skin? I would think that we should pretty much be there by now. Why aren't we, is the question. Well, some of the factors, I think, is that for some people, continuing a grinding, an agitation between races, religions, creeds, nationalities, pays them money. They make a living off of the conflict. And if there was no conflict, their living would end. They would have to do something else. And, you know, it's pretty easy to be a person who just stirs the pot whenever there's something going on. So you encourage pot stirring, if you know what I mean. All right. We all know there are political figures out there who have stirred the pot, the racial pot, whenever they've had the chance, because, hey, it turns into money for them. And therefore, there's nothing in it to solve the problem. The rest of us who actually live here, the rest of us citizens, all of us citizens, no matter our color, race, creed, national origin, religion, the rest of us are out here just trying to live our lives. And I think we would all prefer just to get along, right? Enjoy each other's culture. Everybody's culture is different. You know, I told you about a time when I was a cop and I was on patrol and I come around a corner of a building and there was a big piece of woods. You know, there was big woods next to the apartment complex, and a group of people living there had cut down part of the woods and they created a fire pit and they were roasting a pig. And they got all nervous because they saw the cop car and they're roasting a pig and they probably needed a permit to make a fire. They probably shouldn't have cut the woods down. They said, I could care less. That wasn't my purview. I didn't see anything wrong with it. They looked like they were being safe. You know, people do chiminés. So I stopped. Hey, how are you? I started talking to everybody. Now, these people were not from my group. They were from a different group. But we started talking. We started laughing. And you know what we had in common? We were all people, right? This was something they were doing culturally. I thought it was pretty cool. I started talking to them about it. They invited me to come back when my shift was over and have something to eat. I thought that was wonderful. And I've told that story before. This is how I think most people would like to get along. I like different cultures. I find it amazing. Why do we go on trips and go to different countries? You know, oh sure, to see the scenery, to see this thing. But don't we go to see the different cultures? Right? It's an amazing thing. The world is filled with amazing things. As humanity, this is where we can find connection to each other. Because we're all mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, grandparents, right? Aren't we all those things, no matter who we are? So when I see this kind of division and this constant grinding culturally and grinding against one another, I find that to be part of the plan, so to speak. Now, I guess I have to address this one way or another. Is there a huge conspiracy out there to cause this to happen, to cause this socialization of our country? Is there like a meeting? Is there a big meeting that they sit around and say, okay, how are we going to get this to happen? Now, most people would not believe in that kind of a conspiracy. Jim Giordano, you know, Jim the Contrarian from the neighborhood here, guys, he's a big conspiracy guy. He believes in the Illuminati and he believes in all these different groups. And you know what? To tell you the truth, a lot of people do. You know, I don't know that there's an Illuminati where they have a big meeting and they decide how the world's going to go. Some people believe that high tech, the big tech companies get together and because they got trillions of dollars, they decide how the culture's going to go and where the country's going to go. I don't know that that happens, or I don't know that it doesn't happen. Is it possible? Of course it is. But I know one thing, creating a conspiracy, an actually working conspiracy, is not easy. You know, there's a saying in law enforcement that says, when two people know something, it will get out, right? And that's why when, you know, two people do a plan and they commit a crime and there's a lot of money involved, sometimes one person kills the other person to shut them up. Because when two people know something, then everyone is going to know about it. So is that that's why I see, you know, these major conspiracies are almost impossible to get all of these groups of people together, all of these people to agree and to take action. On the other side of that, I'll never forget the great late Rush Limbaugh talked about this one time. And Rush was saying that, you know, when President Obama came to office as a very liberal individual and he appointed people that had his same philosophical ideations, which that's normal. Every president that comes in brings in their people. That's why we vote, right? We have two different parties, two different ideologies. And when he did, the people he brought in, he didn't have to sit down with them and say, listen, I want you to start going after people who are conservative. I want you to use the mechanism of government against them. I want us to go after people's Second Amendment rights. We want to limit that. I want to change the courts so that they vote more liberal. There wasn't a big meeting where he sat down and did that. He brought in people who were like-minded to him. And he knew by bringing them in, they believed in the same things, they would naturally do those things. Isn't that the idea? You get a conservative president, and you expect him to do what? Appoint conservative judges who are going to do what? Rule in a conservative fashion, a constitutional fashion, when they're on the bench. The president doesn't call them in and say, listen, now, I'm going to appoint you, and I expect you to vote for this, that, and the other thing. Is that what you're going to do? Because if not, I'm not. No, that's not what happens. They listen to the, they know they're conservative people, and they appoint them so that they will behave in a conservative manner. Well, our liberal friends do the same thing. They bring in their liberal friends. So when Rush had talked about that, that made a lot of sense. You know, you could see Obama didn't have a meeting. He brought in people who were like-minded thinkers. They heard his words. They knew what his plans were, and then they acted accordingly. Well, I think the same thing happens in this big conspiracy. And the reason I bring up the conspiracy thing is that this is another conversation we've been having at my house about the COVID. Okay? How come there are, and Kathleen brought this up, you know, because she's very interested in this and she's trying to understand it. She's very big on the conspiracy theory. She just doesn't know where it comes from, just like I don't know where it could be. Is there a conspiracy? How come the mask thing, when if you research and you find out, the mask is not the be-all and end-all like they say it is. It does not do what they say it does. The mask is not really a great piece of equipment to protect us. But we all have to wear the mask. Isn't that the message? Wear the mask. Wear the mask. Wear the mask. Okay? Well, why? Why are they driving such a message if it really doesn't work? How come we're not hearing both sides? How come if you say anything against mask wearing, you'll be banned from any social media? You'll be banned from any platform because the message from government is you'll wear the mask and the mask is effective. Well, is there a conspiracy for that? And how about the vaccine? We know that it's not actually a vaccine, right? We know that it is a shot. It is a creation that they believe is going to help prevent getting COVID. But have you seen the meme where the guy's taking the shot and he goes, wow, this means I'm immune? And the person giving them the shot says, no, you can still get it. Well, then why are they pushing only the shot? So Kathleen does her research. She's a very smart woman. And she finds all these different outlets where you have highly trained, highly experienced doctors, immunologists, virologists, all of these people, professional, published, peer-observed for years, highly respected. They're not allowed to get on and say anything. How come, and this was what she brought to my attention, really rung a bell, how come we're hearing that the only answer for this is masks and vaccine? How come we're not hearing about anything to do with how to prevent it? Other than, you know, take some vitamins might help you. But isn't there something you can take, like as soon as you get COVID, that can slow it down or stop it? Oh, hydroxychloroquine has been proven very effective. Yet you're not allowed to say it. You say that on social media, they'll ban you and shut your site down because that is not the official government position. There is nothing but the vaccine and a mask. That's what you'll do. Right? Don't you find that strange? How come we're not hearing, listen, if you get COVID, right? Say you start to feel crappy. And next thing you know, a couple days later, you're feeling so bad, you go down, you have some of the symptoms, you take a test. And then 4 days later, when your test comes back, guess what? You got COVID. Well, you've already had it for a week. There's nothing you can do in the interim from the time you get it until you either live through it or till you get a shot or whatever the treatment is. How come there is no treatments being publicized? As soon as you feel bad, start doing this. Why don't we have that? We have that with everything else, don't we? Something else to think about. You know, I'm running out of time here in this segment. We'll be back in a minute with round three, and the thinking continues.
Well, there was a time when Americans could rely on the Fourth Estate. Well, in these challenging times, the media is both reckless and complicit. AmericaOutloud.com. Top analysis from leading experts, articles, podcast, video, and 24/7 talk radio. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Okay, here we are in round three on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Now, before I jump back in and continue my pontification, let me just say that, you know, the network here is changing for the better again. The America Out Loud Network has always been a very progressive, very free speech progressive, pro-American kind of a station, patriotic kind of a place. We know that many, many, many of our listeners are law enforcement, military people, men and women, patriots across the country, from every walk of life, every race, creed, national origin, whatever. We know that God-loving people, traditional people, constitutional people listen to this station. This is basically who's on here. And we have millions and millions of listeners. But the station has now gone through some change. The webpage has been updated. The writers have been updated. New shows have been added. It is a very exciting time for talk radio. If you like talk radio, and obviously you know you're here because you want to hear talk radio, I'm thrilled that you're here spending time with me. This is a great privilege and an honor for me to have you out there. But the whole station is really amazing. You know, the great Malcolm Out Loud has created a dynamic, powerful tool for freedom, free speech, liberty, and pro-American activities. So, you know, spend some time on the station. Flip around through the different shows. Listen at different times. There's some really great new programs on here and some programs that are tried and true that have been here from the beginning. So tell your friends about America Out Loud. You like it. You listen to it. Right? Get the app. Listen to the podcasts. And thank you for spending time with us. But tell people about it. That's how we're going to grow our numbers and we become a powerful voice in our nation's activities. Okay? So that is my advice from Lieutenant Joe. So to get back to my grind. See, even I'm involved in a grind. I'm grinding, trying to grind the topics together here. The whole conspiracy thing goes with the changing of the culture. There's not, in my opinion, I don't think there's a meeting somewhere. Now, there could be. I don't know. I'm trying to parse that and say it in one way or another. Do I think it's impossible that some of these people, that Fauci and the president and the people who think like him, don't sit and have meetings, strategy meetings? Of course they do. I'm involved in business. We have strategy meetings. How are we going to approach the sale of this product? How are we going to approach that market? How do we reach these people? And we have strategy sessions. So I'm sure they do have strategy sessions. And I suppose a strategy session could be construed as a meeting to further a conspiracy. What is the reason? Now, the vaccine. Like I said, it's not really a vaccine. If you take the vaccine, you have to sign off on the form that says you know you're taking an experimental substance, which means if you get sick and die or get sick and have physical problems because of it, you can't sue anybody. Now, how is that correct? If and as we see the grip tighten on the country where they don't want to have these passports, right? You see a lot of states doing the anti-passport thing. But we can all see and feel what's coming is that you're not going to be allowed to get on an airplane. You don't have to take the shot. Nobody's forcing you to take the shot. But if you don't have your vaccine card to prove you've had the shot, you can't take an airplane ride. Oh, no. You can't come into this building if you don't have your vaccine because this is a private building. Government buildings. Well, only people could come in here that are, you know, vaccinated. You can see that coming. So that's a coercion without a law. You know, there's a coercion without a law. You certainly don't have to take the vaccine. You just can't participate in a lot of things. One of the things we might see in our colleges and universities, probably our public schools as well. If you're not vaccinated, you cannot attend. You can do virtual learning. Or if you're not going to be vaccinated and you come to the university, you can certainly come and spend time in your dorm, but you can't engage in any activities on campus because you're not vaccinated. You're dangerous, right? Is the vaccine, and I use the term loosely, is the vaccine the be-all and end-all for this? Herd immunity? Is it helping? I'm not blind to say it's not doing anything. Obviously, if less and less people are getting it, and we have, you know, 150 million people vaccinated at this point, I think is the number, you know, it probably is having some positive effect, right? But we also know it's having a negative effect. How come we don't hear much about the negative effects? How come we're not hearing, you know, the science? That's what they would say. Go with the science. Go with the science. Well, the science says that masks really are of no benefit. That's not what I heard. Dr. Fauci says, well, he's the only one you're allowed to listen to. He's the only one on social media. There are many other doctors and scientists equally or more qualified than Dr. Fauci who say the mask doesn't really do anything for you. But they're not allowed to be heard. They're silenced. You're only allowed one side of the story. So is that obviously it's a conscious decision, but why? That's what I'm trying to get to. That's what, when Kathleen and I are sitting talking, we're trying to figure out why. Why would the people in authority, in power, want to push only one narrative as opposed to, hey, listen, if you start to get COVID symptoms, why don't you take this? This can be a treatment to help you lessen it or stop it in its tracks before it gets so bad you end up in the hospital, right? There are things you can take. You're just not allowed to hear about them. When has that ever happened before, right? When they tell you the common cold, you get the common cold, drink orange juice, get plenty of rest, take vitamin D, eat vitamin C. People tell you it all the time, right? Why do we get a flu shot? We get a flu shot. It's not 100% effective. It's about what? 50% maybe effective because the flu changes. You know, we have variants of flu every year, but people go and get the flu shot, right? Because we see that, well, some people have a reaction to it, but for the most part, the flu shot has been innocuous. I've gotten a flu shot every year for probably, I don't know, 15 or 20 years now. I had really bad pneumonia 15, 20 years ago. And after that, the doctor said, you should get a flu shot every year. So I do. Now, I don't think anything of it. I've never had a bad reaction. I never got the flu the next day, like people say, which you really don't get. You could have the flu bug already when you get the shot, and then it appears, and everybody says, I got it from the flu shot. No, it's a dead virus. You're not getting a live virus. But the reality is, we take the flu shot, and they tell you, you should also take this, and you should take that, and you should take the other thing when you have a cold or a flu, because it helps ameliorate the... How come we're not getting that with COVID? How come we're not hearing any interim things you can do? And you say to yourself, is it that the people who are pushing the vaccine and the mask, is it about compliance? So let's break that down, because there's some really demonic things that there could be, and I don't know if I go that far, but, you know, compliance, the mask. If the mask is not 100% effective, it's 10% effective. Well, that's good enough. You should do for the 10%. Why isn't it up to me? Because if I'm wearing a mask, then I can't give it to you. If you're wearing a mask, then I can't get it. So if you want to wear a mask and I don't, shouldn't we both be safe from each other? Wouldn't that make common sense if the mask was that effective? But we're not allowed to hear that. We're not allowed to hear a true study. And there are studies. You can go look them up. The mask is not that effective. I'm not against it because the government says to do it. I'm against it because it's uncomfortable. You're breathing in your own air all day long. You've got lower oxygen, and it's not doing anything effective for me. That's why I'm against it. Do I still wear it? I do. Why? Because I follow the rules, because I go into church, and I can't go into church if I don't put on my mask. So I put it on. I can't go into a store if I don't put it on. You see, that is the perfect model for the vaccine. You can't go in the store unless you have your mask on. If you go in there to defy the store, they'll call the police on you, and the police will say you're disorderly, and they'll drag you out and arrest you. Now, that's nothing against the police. They're following the rule. The rule is the owner of the business or whoever says you got to wear a mask or you can't come in. You don't want to wear it. You're being disorderly. You have to leave. You don't want to leave. They'll arrest you for being disorderly and trespassing. Everything has a niche. It all fits together. But the reason why do they make us wear the mask? Is it about compliance to set us up for more compliance? That's the demonic part, all right? Are we heading down that road where they're trying to condition us to just following whatever people demand, whatever government rule demands? And who does that? Do the Republican and the right do those demands? Or do the liberal left-wing people do those kind of demands? Well, it's pretty obvious. Look at any of the governments around the world, and you look and you see left-wing tyrannical governments, they're the ones who have these kind of rules, these compliance rules. And if you don't follow them, off you go to wherever. Re-education camps, right? Haven't our friends on the left talked about having re-education camps to get the Trump people's minds right? Where does that all come from? Well, my friends, this stuff is written down. There's a book called Rules for Radicals. And if you read it honestly and you look at it, lots of the things that our friends on the left are doing are right in that book on how to control the population. For what purpose? To enhance our freedom and liberty or to limit our freedom and liberty? Why would somebody want to limit our freedom and liberty? Why would any group want to control us more? Well, that's always been the standby position of humanity, is to be controlled, right? America has been the one place where we fought against that. So I'm getting kind of far afield here as I'm thinking through this. But when we look at this, if the mask is not that effective, then why are they making us wear? What's the purpose of the compliance? If the shot is not 100% immunity and there are potential health risks to it, why make it mandatory? So now we go far to the conspiracy, right, where people say there's nanobugs and stuff and nanoelectronics in there so they can track you and stuff. I don't believe that. But why push this vaccine if you can still get the COVID? And if it's only effective for 6 months, as they're saying, why push it? Why make people have to carry little cards around where I have to divulge my health care, right? I have to tell people I've had a certain shot, I've been vaccinated. Can you do that with anything else? You really can't. So this is where the conspiracy people come together. I was listening to another radio show that I'm not going to mention here, and it's a comedy show. And the host is a pretty funny guy, and he had somebody else on, and they're like, I don't understand these Trumpy people across the country, man. They don't want to listen to science. They want to ignore the science. And I said, wait a minute. The science about the mask is not 100%. The science about the mask says it doesn't work. But you're saying if Fauci says it, then that's the science. You have to stick with it. The vaccine is not 100%, and it could be dangerous to you. Well, we're not allowed to hear that, but that's the science, so you have to do it. Where's the other side of the science? This is the nutshell of the conspiracy. Why just push one side of it? And this is where I break it down to. Either it is for good reasons, they really and truly believe that the vaccine will keep people healthy and safe. And you know what? Out of 330 million people, if you have 5% of people have a negative reaction and die or get very sick or be debilitated, that number is inconsequential for the overall good. Now let's talk about our statistics from segment one, when we talked about the small number of people, white and black, killed by law enforcement officers compared to the millions of contacts with law enforcement officers. It's insignificant compared to the population. So why in one case is it important to follow it and in another it's not, right? Why can we have the shots if they're not effective and could cause deaths and injuries? And we find that even that low number means nothing. But in another area, there's a low number and we ignore it and we pump up the event. Why? Who does this serve? This is the essence of why my comedian friend on the radio doesn't seem to understand why people are so confused. People are confused, and I'll tell you right now. Here's why. Write this down. People are confused because they're not stupid. They're not stupid. And they have seen we can't get a straight answer from the media. We can't get a straight, truthful answer from the politicians. We know people have agendas that are not really so hidden, but they lie about them and do them anyway. No, Mr. Biden, running for president, are you going to pack the court? I'm not going to answer that question because these people here will make a big deal out of it. Wouldn't that be an important decision-making metric that you would have? Do you want the courts packed? No, I don't. Well, Biden says he's for it. Well, I'm not going to vote for him then. That's why he wouldn't say it. And we let them get away with that he didn't answer that. Back in the day, the media would have been all over that candidate that wouldn't answer such an important question. But today, the media was on his side, so therefore they just let it ride. And then what's he do when he gets in office? I'm going to pack the court. I'm going to have a commission. Does anybody think that commission's going to come back and say, it's not a good idea to pack the court? Does anybody think that, really? Or do you think the commission that he puts together of John Kerry and Hillary Clinton and seven other left-wing people and one conservative like Mitt Romney will be on there, conservative Mitt Romney, and they'll come back and say, we think it's a good idea to add four justices and to make Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. a state. And add, four more senators, right? Does anybody believe it's going to come out any other way? No, we're not stupid. And they're lying to us about it. That is why people are confused and upset, because you can't get a clear answer. We're being lied right to our face now. The media goes along with it, and there's no alternative. There's no alternative to any of the things that we're hearing and seeing that are the truth. It gives me pause to think about it in the bigger picture. I look in and I see we have some real enemies in the world. We do. We have some real enemies in the world. We have the Chinese government, the communist Chinese government, whose long-term goal, and they live long-term, not like Americans who are, you know, from news cycle to news cycle. Their long-term goal is domination of the world. We can see it happening slowly and surely everywhere. We see them inching outward, inching outward, inching outward. And when they finally take over, is it going to be a utopian panacea of happiness and brotherly love? Or is it going to be a traditional communist stronghold, iron fist life? Well, look in history and you can see exactly what's coming. But we don't pay attention to that. Instead, we talk about nonsense over here in America. Instead, we talk about absurd, ridiculous. I can't imagine that the Chinese are not laughing, hysterical, going, these people are just going to give their freedom and their lives away to us. It's just a matter of time. Look how far down the road they've come. Russia. Okay, Putin, is he a bad actor? He is. I think if given the opportunity, he will take land, he will take people's things, he will crush them, he will reassemble the Soviet Union if he could. I think he could. I think he would. But we're not paying attention to him, other than he liked Trump and therefore we have to talk about him. The reality is we have these evil, bad things happening in the world, and what are the nonsense things Americans are arguing about and talking about every day? How are we spending our time? Being lied to, being fooled, being into compliance. Right? This is where we're going, ladies and gentlemen. This is my concern. So let's wrap this whole thing up in a nice, neat bow. Our culture is giving us indicators of where we're going. Our politicians and our media are giving us indications of where we're going. The things that we hear, see, and do tell us where we're going. So my question is, what do we do about it? Well, the long and short of it is, sooner rather than later, we're all going to have to make decisions. Decisions that are going to change everything. What decisions are you willing to make? And what do you see coming? And I'm going to leave it right there for this episode of Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. This is Lieutenant Joe signing off, saying, see you down the road. Remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. And think. See you next time.